This podcast is intended for investment professionals.
Hello and welcome to LGIM Talks for this special episode to mark the renewal of our Climate Impact Pledge. I'm Max Julius, Head of Content, and I'm delighted to be joined by Miriam Omi, Head of Sustainability and Responsible Investment Strategy, and two other members of our investment stewardship team who are both Senior Sustainability Analysts, Iyanki Daramus and Yasmin Svan. Hi everyone, and welcome to our virtual pod.
Hi Max.
Hi Max, thanks for having us.
It's a pleasure to have you. Well, Miriam, I'll kick off by asking you to set the scene. What is LGIM's Climate Impact Pledge and why did we launch it?
Sure. So we launched Climate Impact Pledge, which is our engagement, very structured engagement on climate change 4 years ago. And this is after what we call the Paris Agreement was signed back in 2015, when all the countries came together and said, look, climate change is something that we need to tackle globally together. Let's do this. So building on that momentum, we really recognize climate change is a material financial risk and opportunity for us. So we said, what can we do to help companies succeed in this massive transition to go into this low carbon economy where all the countries said that we need to get to? And how could we be impactful in a way that we engage with companies? So this is when we came up with this term, engagement with consequences. What we were aware of back then is that there was a lot of engagement going on, and we have been talking to companies on climate for a long time, but it could just go on forever. And we needed to inject a sense of urgency in that conversation. So what we did is that not only that we have a structured engagement program, but when we don't get the result that we wish to get from our companies, we hold them accountable by voting against the chair of the board and divest in some of our funds. And so companies know that our conversations are going somewhere. And by doing that, we believe we really protect our clients' assets in the long run.
Thank you, Miriam. Now, given that background and that important point about engagement with consequences, Iyanki, how have companies, sectors, and regions performed against our metrics over the 4 years since we unveiled the pledge?
So what are we seeing? We're seeing a fast-changing narrative coupled with slow but steady progress on the ground. And there isn't really a better example than the oil and gas industry and how it's changed the narrative from saying there's no such thing as stranded assets to this phrase making its way into asset write-downs, from saying oil demand will keep growing for decades to we might have already passed peak oil demand. So there's a lot of change in the way sectors are talking about the role in the low carbon future. And we're seeing this general positive trend across all sectors and across all regions since the start of our engagement. Quite interestingly, sometimes it's the high carbon industries that are more engaged with climate issues at the strategy level. You know, if you think about utilities, mining, these are some of the sectors that have been at the forefront of the energy transition and seeing the disruptive impact of renewables or electric vehicles. Not everything is positive, and I think it is time to say the F word. By that I mean food and financials. They've historically lagged in some of our scores. But partly as a result of regulation and other pressures, we're seeing banks and insurance companies step up. Indeed, our own parent company, Legal & General, has pledged to align its business and balance sheet with the Paris Agreement. Food remains an area of concern, particularly around deforestation, the supply chain, and the transition to lower impact in alternatives. And we have engaged and continue to engage with food companies on this issue. We're also seeing some concerns around the decrease in elements around accountability and transparency, and some of our board governance metrics have also gone down. And it's important because without good governance and oversight, all the announced ambitions that you have from companies might not come to fruition. Indeed, we're seeing some increase in the metrics which track reputational risk. You know, you can think of it as greenwashing risk perhaps increasing. Overall, In terms of countries, we're seeing progress in the average score of the most countries we've looked at, with some of the highest year-on-year improvements in Australia, Japan, South Korea. So, you know, there's an element here of emerging markets and countries outside the Western world catching up in terms of climate disclosures. And indeed, in the US, despite President Trump's pledge to leave the Paris Agreement, we're starting to see companies, US companies, talk more about climate change in their disclosures, on earnings calls, on strategy days. And I think there's no better example of this idea that there is a catch-up going on across different markets than the fact that China recently announced plans for net zero emissions by 2060. So, you know, the general progress across sectors and countries is the key message.
Right. So a broadly positive trend, even though the picture remains mixed and progress is somewhat halting. Now, looking at the broader market beyond the companies with which we've engaged and the regions you've discussed, what has changed over this period?
You're absolutely right. There have been a lot of changes in the market. Let's start with data and modeling. There's been an absolute explosion in the availability and quality of data available to investors. Some of it is self-disclosed, might come from companies, you know, in their annual reports or analyst materials or earning calls. Indeed, we see CEOs talking a lot more frequently about climate-related risks on their investor calls. Some of this data relies on specialist data providers. Indeed, we here at Elgium have partnered with an external energy consultancy and a third-party data provider to be able to construct a model of the global energy system and the implications of different climate change scenarios for companies and portfolios. And we're bringing some of this data to bear in the new stages of our engagements and scoring. Linked to data, there's, you know, the issues around scientific modeling, and the scientific community has been much more vocal in sounding the alarm around the risks of climate change. Very notably, there's been a change in the conversation around the Paris Agreement. It was previously thought that humanity should aspire to limit global warming to 2 degrees relative to pre-industrial times. But since then, the scientific community has been much more vocal that there are significant risks in if we don't aspire to a more ambitious target of 1.5 degrees. And that has changed, you know, has changed public conversation. It has led to increased public pressure. If you think about movements such as Extinction Rebellion, or, you know, the figure of Greta Thunberg and her climate strikes, Blue Planet, David Attenborough's the documentaries and shows, there's a sea change in public awareness with regards to climate change. And that is leading to changes in public policy and regulation. We've mentioned the UK has a net zero emissions target. Since then, the EU has passed, has voted in its parliament, a climate change law to limit greenhouse gas emissions to net zero. China has announced plans for carbon neutrality. All this change is happening, and it's also happening closer to home within our world of finance, where regulation is trying to embed climate considerations into pretty much every aspect of the investment chain, from the policies of asset owners, pension funds, through to the investment advice given by consultants, and through to the end disclosures of investee companies. And indeed, you know, what used to be thought as voluntary disclosures, climate disclosures under the Task Force for Climate-Related Financial Disclosures, which is fast becoming the best standard in reporting, and increasingly becoming mandatory, not just voluntary. So many changes across, you know, from the public through to regulators and the boardroom.
Well, I mean, that's fascinating. I'm sure many of those points will resonate with our listeners, particularly the protests, say. Mariam, you know, drawing all of this together, this quite different picture, how are we at Elgium responding to those changes?
Yes, so what we have done is reconcile all of that's happened in the last 4 years, reflected on ourselves and say, can we do more? Because there's a lot more happening. Can we up our game even more than what we have been doing? And what we're happy to announce today is that, yes, we have stepped up because companies are stepping up, countries are stepping up, despite some noises. Essentially, a lot of countries are stepping up. The UK has signed up to net zero, along with many other countries. And people on the street are saying, I want to do my part. So really reflecting on that, we said the challenge is now is to come to the common goal of bringing the global emission to what we call net zero point. Now, the goal is to bring the emissions down to near zero point in the next 30 years or somewhere around there. And that's a huge challenge for all of us. Can you imagine how much we emit ourselves in the way that we eat, in the way that we travel, in the way that we, you know, heat our homes, and everything has to come to near zero? That's the challenge that we're talking about today. And so what we want to do is help the companies even more in this incredibly phenomenal transformation that we will all go through. And to do that, we needed to be contacting and sending the message to more companies, more sectors, more countries, and have much more impact using the data and disclosure that Yanku talked about. So I'll hand over to Yasmin, who's going to talk about what that more that I'm saying means.
Great. So yeah, so firstly, as Miriam alluded to, we're widening our scope. So as Yanku mentioned, the movements in the markets mean that we now have the data sets available to move from a relatively narrow focus on just the largest companies in six sectors to an approach where we're assessing all companies in 15 climate critical sectors, as we're terming them, on key metrics that recapture their transition to a low carbon economy. And these new data sets also mean that we're now able to apply our voting policies much more comprehensively. So if I put it simply, it essentially means that if you're a company in a climate critical sector and you're not meeting even the very minimum standards in terms of disclosure, in terms of management of climate related risks, there may be a voting sanction applied. And as the market is continuously moving further and faster on climate change, our expectations and voting policies will be escalated in tandem with evolving best practice. And you may also over time see a divestment implication for a specific range of our funds for those companies which consistently are finding themselves at the bottom of the pack. And then secondly, for a smaller group of large companies, which are highly influential in their respective sectors, we're cutting out some of the noise of engagement to really focus in on the central challenge. Are they adopting their business strategy in alignment with a net zero emissions trajectory? So these companies will be the target of a hands-on, deeper net zero engagement focused explicitly on supporting them to A, commit to a net zero trajectory, and be evidence to investors and other stakeholders that they have the business and investment plans in place to support such a transition.
Great. So it's a broader and deeper type of engagement going forward. I know that you've also augmented the metrics that underpin our climate scores on which we carry out the work as part of the pledge. Could you talk us through the key changes there to those metrics?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're, first of all, very excited to be able to share on a dedicated Climate Impact Pledge website going forward all of the metrics that we use to assess companies on their climate change management, as well as whether their performance on these metrics meet our expectations or not. And so going forward, we're leveraging some of the new innovations in the market. So we're leveraging data sets from the Transition Pathway Initiative, for example, which assesses companies' future carbon emissions performance. For certain sectors, we're looking at the robustness of, for example, environmental lending standards or deforestation policies. And we're also leveraging novel data points from the LGIM and Baringa partnership, which assesses a company's value at risk in a low carbon scenario, as well as their current temperature alignment. And given that we are in such a critical inflection point in terms of climate change policy, we're also continuing to assess companies on their climate-related lobbying practices. as well as assessing them on the comprehensiveness of their climate-related disclosure. So, for example, are they disclosing in line with the TCFD framework via CDP for sectors where it's relevant and where they have very large emissions in their up or downstream value chains? We're assessing whether they're being transparent about these emissions or disclosing these emissions. That's it in a snapshot, essentially.
And I just want to add to Yasmin's point about the scores. Obviously, this data points disclosure from companies is pivotal for us, right? Because we are invested in hundreds and hundreds of companies. So this kind of data points allows us to really traffic light the company's performance. But I do also want to say that there are a lot of qualitative elements to being a net zero company. And for that, we have done a lot of research of what net zero transition means in each of those 15 sectors, whether it be cement or utilities or bank. They're completely different from each other, and published our research in terms of what that challenge means and also what our expectations are from that sector that is unique to their industry. So I hope that the companies and our clients can see that we are mobilizing all the data points, but we're also looking at qualitative ways that in which that we need to see leadership from the companies globally.
Well, thank you for talking through those dynamics there. And this has been a really fascinating discussion on a crucial topic. I'll just put one final question to you as a group. It would be great if you could each give your separate answers to it. And that is, what message would you most like our listeners to take away about the climate crisis that we're all facing?
So I'll start. This is Miriam here. So I think we all have a role to play. You've been told about maybe recycling. Maybe you've told about your renewable energy provider as opposed to the ones who may be burning coal. And all of those individual choices really make a difference. But what I like to say is that how you invest, particularly with your pension pot, but any other investment, really matters. That the choice of fund matters, but also choice of provider matters. And I'm not just saying that because I'm working for one of the providers, but really making sure that the people who manage your money, whether it be us or any other of our peer group, is engaging on this topic. So we're pushing the companies in the right direction because we don't really have an alternative here. We can't live in a world where the temperature has risen to 4 degrees. We don't even want to imagine that. So do everything that you can, including choice of your pension, to be more sustainable.
Great. So Yasmin here, I can go next, and I'll direct this to the perspective of the companies in our portfolio. So the challenge that we're facing may look daunting, and it is, because in many cases, we're talking about a complete change of gear for an entire industry. But the cost of inaction will undoubtedly be higher. And I think the next 10 years are really critical if we want to preserve economic stability in the long term. And for this reason, we urgently need companies to work in collaboration across their supply chain with their sector peers, with policymakers, and of course, their investors to meet this challenge.
Thank you. And building up from this point around the scale of the challenge, I guess I have two takeaway messages. The first is that there are no simple solutions. Sometimes, you know, the public discourse is around, oh, you know, the bad companies or something like that. Looking at the scale of the challenge makes you realize that all sectors have a role to play. And, you know, sometimes the risks and the opportunities might be in the very same sector. But that's the first message. You know, there's no simple solutions. And indeed, you've seen this in the pandemic, you know, it's the same oil companies that produce, you know, polluting fossil fuels and hand sanitizers. So, you know, it's a very complex picture. There are no simple solutions, but there are solutions. And that is what we'd like to focus on, getting the collaboration across policymakers and companies and consumers and investors to drive forward those solutions.
Well, that's a great point on which to end this episode. I'd like to thank you, Miriam, Yasmin, and Iyanku for your time today, and our listeners for tuning in. You can find a vast amount of additional information on the pledge on its dedicated landing page on our website, elgem.com. including a report authored by the speakers who joined us on today's call. Thank you all. Speak to you soon.
If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous on the Apple Podcast app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookout for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording and do not reflect the views of Legal & General Investment Management. Legal & General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. And remember to share this podcast with your investment professional friends, colleagues, or even family members. To find more great content, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.